Modern smartphones are sleek and thin, but they're also fragile and expensive. If you're really careful, you may use it until you're ready to upgrade without shattering the glass. But if you look around, you'll see most phones wrapped in a case for protection. Our personal data is even more valuable than the device it's stored on, and it deserves just as much protection. The work that I do requires me to travel a lot, which means I'm frequently connected to unfamiliar networks. Nefarious hackers can make up to $1,000 selling the data of each of their victims on the dark web, and there are cheap hardware and software tools readily available that let even a smart middle schooler snatch your data without you even noticing. A virtual private network, or VPN, like ExpressVPN, creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your devices and the servers that you're transmitting data to and from. When you're sitting at the airport gate area, or airline lounge, or even your hotel room, those Wi-Fi networks aren't secure. Your bits are flying through the air, and whether you're checking your bank account balance, sending data to a client, or just checking your email, bad actors can snatch up your usernames, passwords, and everything else you send and receive if it's not encrypted. The layers of security used by ExpressVPN would take over a billion years to expose by bad guys with some of the most powerful supercomputers. ExpressVPN trusted server technology also runs each session in memory in a unique virtual space that is wiped clean as you end your session, with none of your data ever written to a hard drive, so there's no residue for anyone to recover about what you were doing after the fact. ExpressVPN runs on almost all devices, including Windows, Mac, iOS, Linux, Android, streaming devices like Chromecast, Roku, Fire Stick, and Apple TV, and there's also a Chrome browser extension. It's super simple to use. Once you install ExpressVPN, it's one click to establish a secure encrypted tunnel with servers in 105 countries around the world. I've personally been paying for and using ExpressVPN for years on all of my personal devices. When I first started using VPNs for work more than 20 years ago, they were often slow and unstable and had to be restarted frequently. But with ExpressVPN, data speeds are virtually unchanged from running fully exposed, so you can just turn the VPN on and leave it on. I often get materials from clients and companies that are under embargo or NDA, and if it leaks out, I can get into some trouble. But even if I just wanted to reach back to my personal server to grab some files, check my email, or watch something that's only available on one of my streaming services at home while I'm out of the country, ExpressVPN lets me do it all securely. Your data is valuable. Don't let bad actors steal it and potentially misuse it. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. That's expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. And you can get an extra 3 months free when you sign up. Expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. And thanks to ExpressVPN for supporting Wheelbearings.
Save big money and transform your home with new appliances now at Menards. We offer the lowest prices and the largest in-stock appliance selection ready to take home today. Check out top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade your home and save big money on new appliances at Menards. Shop our entire selection of appliance options online today at Menards.com. Save big money at
Menards. Coming up on episode 275 of Wheel Bearings, it's just the boys as we have the 2023 Genesis GV60 Performance, Honda's new Level 2 and Level 3 driver assist systems, as well as a plug-in hybrid fuel cell CR-V coming in 2024, off-road Lamborghini Huracans and Porsche 911s, and some listener questions. All that coming up next. This is episode 275 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abual Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from, Motor One. I'm from Motor One.
Oh, from Motor One this week. Okay.
Yeah.
And where are you tonight, Robbie?
I am in Las Vegas. I know we're not doing the live stream because this is like a last minute thing, but there is an orb. I'm just going to show Sam. There's just a random orb on this desk that I'm using. I don't know why. I think it's supposed to be the moon. It's very weird. I feel like that I own the orb of power, and because of that, I control the universe, at least for the day.
Okay, that works.
But I'm in Las Vegas to drive a McLaren, which there will be video of it on Engadget sometime this week, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
All right. Well, I am at home in Ypsilanti tonight, and you didn't drive anything this week because you're behind schedule on a bunch of stuff.
That's a nice way of saying Robbie doesn't write fast enough.
But I drove the 2023 Genesis GV60 Performance. Yes. And I had previously driven it briefly back in May at the Mama Spring Rally at Road America, but that was only for about 10, 15 minutes. This time I got to spend a whole week with it, which was lovely. This is the Genesis variant of the first batch of Hyundai EGMP models. So you get the Hyundai Ioniq 5, the Kia EV6, and the GV60. So it's the first plug-in battery electric vehicle from Genesis. It's the most premium of the first three EGMP cars, and it's quite speedy. Hence the performance. There's two variants of the GV60. There's the base model and the performance. And the base model has the same motor setup as the all-wheel drive EV6 and Ioniq 5. So 314 horsepower, slightly smaller front motor, larger rear motor. And the performance gets 429 horsepower. So you get larger, you get the same 160 kilowatt motor at both axles. And in addition to that, it also has a boost mode, which there's a button on the steering wheel on the right-hand drive spoke. It says boost. You hit that button and you'll see a countdown timer on the instrument cluster startup and counting down from 10, and you can get 10-second boost mode that bumps that power output up to 483 horsepower.
Which is, by the way, I've driven this car. It's outstanding, but it's also very Porsche.
Yes. And presumably the reason why you only get 10 seconds is because while it's giving you that maximum power, the motors are heating up, the battery's heating up, and Genesis doesn't want you to, just run this continuously like that, and fry everything. So they give you a 10-second boost, which, to be fair, is plenty fast enough to get yourself into all kinds of trouble.
10 seconds is a long time.
It is, especially
if you really think about it, when you're behind the wheel.
When you can get from a standing start to 60 miles an hour in 3.5 seconds, by the end of that 10 seconds, by the time that 10 seconds is done, if you have kept your right foot buried in it, you're going to be at a speed where you could be in get yourself into some serious jeopardy. So yeah. I think 10 seconds is definitely more than enough at a shot. And the nice thing about it is you just press the button. And you don't have to go through any kind of rigmarole. You don't have to do the Watts to Freedom on the Hummer where you've got the thing's got to lower itself down and
it's got to grumble at you.
Or
get an attitude adjustment.
The super acceleration mode on the Model S Plaid, where it's got to heat up the battery or get the battery to the right temperature and all. You got to go through all kinds of rigmarole just to get one acceleration run at maximum performance. This, you just hit the button and you go. Simple as that. Very, very easy. This car is roughly the same size. It's technically a crossover for whatever that actually means in 2022.
Yeah.
Which means not anything.
It's a hatchback that where you sit a little bit higher than you would in a regular hatchback. That's essentially what crossover means now.
Yeah, and that's fine. I'm good with that. It's roughly the same size as the Ioniq 5 EV6, which is good. It means there's plenty of room in the back seat certainly for two adults and three if they're not too wide. It is capable of doing 240 kilowatt charging, assuming you can find a charger that is capable of delivering at least 240 kilowatts. Unfortunately, as it turned out, I went to my local EA station that's down the road from me three times over the course of the weekend after doing a bunch of driving and getting it down to about under 20% state of charge. because I wanted to see, you know, how fast it would actually charge. I even did some driving and you know, did the preconditioning. Yeah, I set the turned on preconditioning, set the navigation to guide me to the charging station, drove around for a while till it was all warmed up. And when you put it in, when you have it in preconditioning mode, in the little icon in the instrument cluster that gives you, that shows you the state of charge, you'll see a little coil appear there because it's, that's indicating that it's warming up the battery to get it to that optimum temperature to accept a charge.
Like an electric range?
Yes, exactly. And I arrived at my Electrify America station only to find somebody plugged into the one working 350 kilowatt charger, because the other one, I tried it, tried both of the cables on it. It would not recognize that it was plugged into a car. I called Electrify America to complain about it. They said, yeah, we've got a ticket in on that one. Hopefully we'll get it fixed soon. The other 350 kilowatt charger was currently being used by a Chevy Bolt. There were two other 150 kilowatt chargers available, but the driver of the Bolt opted to use the 350.
I feel like I'm just beating a dead horse, but the fact that automakers are not upfront about the charge, the actual charge rate, not the time from 10 to 80%, mm-hmm. but the actual charge rate of their cars and how quickly their cars charge at a station is why we end up with Chevy Bolts. They can only charge up to 50 kilowatts at 350 kilowatt like spots.
Yeah.
Because we're not doing a very good job, or the automakers are not doing a very good job, or the regular press is not doing a very good job of just explaining that. I think if you read tech sites and you read car sites, then you probably got a good handle on it. But everyone else is just sort of like, they'll figure it out.
And I'm sure that, you know, when Electrify America starts adding their hyper fast and ultra fast charging labels to their chargers, their 150 and 350 kilowatt chargers, and I'm not sure which one is which, but I'm sure that will clear up all the confusion and everybody will be charging at the right chargers.
It's a start on their end, but it doesn't help that the automakers are still sort of coy about like how fast their cars charge. I'm like, just give us a number so we can send it to the people, and then the people know my car charges at 50 kilowatts. Anything under 150 is fine.
Yeah. So I came back I went home, came back two more times over the course of the weekend to find, let's see, one time there was a Mach-E charging on that one working 350 kilowatt charger. The other time there was a Polestar 2. So nobody during that weekend actually was able to take proper advantage of that particular charger. I came back on Monday. I figured, okay, maybe, you know, be less occupied, you know, in the middle of a Monday. People are working or whatever, only to find that the crew had finally arrived to do the rip and replace on the chargers.
All of them,
all six of them. Yes. When I talked with Electrify America about a month or so ago, about some things they were doing, they told me that, all their ABB chargers, that they had been having a lot of problems with, they were all going to be replaced by the end of the year. Including the one here in Ypsilanti. And as it turned out, they picked the time when I had the GV60 to do it.
It's like the GV60, the Porsche Taycan. What else is 800 volt?
The Audi e-tron GT.
The e-tron GT, which is essentially like, yeah.
And the Hummer.
And the Hummer. Yeah, those are the ones. Those are the ones, and that's the... As soon as you have one, they're like, yeah, we're going to break everything down and rebuild it.
Yeah. So when I last drove by there on Friday, you know, they had all the old chargers ripped out. They hadn't yet started installing the new ones. And they're putting in new chargers that have been designed by Electrify America with a partner specifically for their needs, that will supposedly give them a lot better capability to monitor and diagnose problems with the chargers. So that when they send a technician out to fix it, they'll know hopefully exactly what the problem is when they get there.
Plus, they're using off the shelf stuff. I mean, they didn't design this stuff. I mean, they sort of designed it, but they designed it with like just sort of like a Lego set. But you're using Duplo and then those weird. Well,
they basically designed like what the outer case looks like. So they all had a consistent look, but the guts inside,
it's the Homer
hit and miss.
The guts inside of Electrify America is a Homer. And so now they're like, oh, why don't we just design and do all this? I mean, they had to like deploy it legally, like they legally had to do it.
Yeah, because this was all part of their settlement with the Department of Department of Justice and state of California for Dieselgate. You know, they agreed that we're going to invest $2 billion in charging infrastructure. And so to do that, they established a new business unit called Electrify America. And in Canada, they did Electrify Canada, and they started deploying DC fast charging all across the country. As far as deploying it, they've done a good job. It's just the equipment they put out there was not so great, and they haven't done a great job with maintenance. But hopefully it will get better. We'll see in the coming months once these new chargers are installed if it actually does get any better. So I ended up not doing any fast charging tests with the GV60, I did drive it around quite a bit. Had a lot of fun with it. This is a very quick car. I like the way it looks. I like the look and feel of the interior. It's very comfortable. One neat touch is when you put it into the seats on the performance model, they have a bunch of adjustments, including adjustable side bolsters. And when you switch it from eco or performance to sport mode, the side bolsters tighten up to hold you in place, so that you're sitting right in front, so you remain sitting right in front of the steering wheel, and you're going to slide around a little bit less, which is nice and handy. Like we've talked before about the shifter knob, which when you first get in the car, when the car is off, it's got this cool, looks like a glass sphere that's got some internal lights in it that looks really neat. But you can't, there's nothing to grab and you can't twist it or anything. And then when you press the start button, then this thing flips over, rotates over, and now you have the shift dial to select park, reverse, neutral, and drive. So that gives you a visual indication of whether the car is actually on or off. Because obviously with an EV, it's always quiet. So it's nice to have that visual indicator. And it's just a cool little design feature. One other interesting design touch that they did on the GV60 is this is one of the first cars that has biometrics for entry and starting of the car. So when you first get in the car, you have to have, there's two key fobs. You have to have both key fobs with you to program the biometrics. And you go in the menu, set up your profile, and then it'll ask you, there's a fingerprint sensor on the center console, and there's a camera outside of the car on the B pillar for a face ID. And so first it'll ask you to step outside the car, look at the camera, and you'll see a little circle, a light rotate around the camera, and then it turns green, indicating that it has recognized your face, it's captured your face. Then you get back in the car and do the same usual fingerprint thing that you would do with your phone if your phone has a fingerprint sensor and recognize that. So now without a key fob and without having the digital key on your phone, which you can also do as another option, you can just walk up to the car, look at the B pillar, and it'll recognize your face. And then you can get in, press the fingerprint button, and then start the car, and you're on your way without having anything. Which is all very handy. I don't know how secure it actually is. Hopefully Hyundai has, done everything properly to keep all that data secured. It has secure element in the chip that controls all this stuff. So it's all properly encrypted. But it is a convenient touch.
It was nice when I had the car and I could just go out and I needed some, I was like outside doing something. I'm like, oh, I need something out of the car. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I don't have to go inside and get the key. I just like went over and looked at it. It's all click. So that was nice.
Yeah. So this is not an inexpensive car. As equipped, the GV60 Performance that I had was priced at $69,560, which is fairly expensive.
It's not a cheap car.
No.
It feels nice, though. And yeah. you're getting all this fun stuff.
It feels premium. It feels like a $70,000 car.
Yeah, definitely feels nice and luxurious. And,
you know, I mean, if you want, you know, largely the same mechanical bits without all the fancy gadgetry like the biometrics and the flip over shifter and things like that, you know, you can go buy a Hyundai Ioniq 5 for about 42,000-43,000. You know, so,
yeah,
you know, like $25,000-$27,000 less, and get, you know, certainly you get the same battery and you're going to get, the same kind of motors in there. So you can get a lot of the important stuff for a lot less money, if you want to. The GV60 Performance is rated at 235 miles of range. When I had it, it was fairly cold most of the time. So I was using the heat, and I didn't run it all the way down, but it worked out that it averaged about 3 miles per kilowatt hour, which works out to about 220 miles of range. So a little bit less than the estimate, but as I said, it was cold. And I was using the heat, while driving it. So, you know, not bad, you know, 220 miles when it's cold. I think, you know, in more moderate temperatures when it's warmer out, you could easily hit that 235 and probably, a little more than that, maybe get up to 240, 245, without any difficulty. You can also get the standard GV60. That I think has 250 miles of range. It's still very quick. You know, it'll still do 0-60 in like the mid 4 second range. So it's still more than quick enough for almost everybody. And you get most of the goodies with it anyway. So I really enjoyed driving the GV60. I've always enjoyed driving all of these EGMP models from Hyundai Motor Group, and this is just the latest.
So good in their own way. And they're all based on the same platform, but they all have just enough character in their own to make it seem like, oh, well, this is really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my personal favorite is still the EV6. I like the way it looks, and the way it drives, but you know, I wouldn't say no to any of them. I like them all.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like the Ioniq 5, but that's a nice thing is there's one for everyone.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into a few stories of the week. Let's start off. Honda actually made a couple of announcements this week. Early in the week, they announced their intention to launch new, more advanced driver assist systems in the coming years, and have them all available globally across their product line by 2030. They already last year in Japan on a limited run of the Honda Legend launched Honda Sensing Elite, which at the time was the first production level 3 automated driving system, which means that at level 3, it means you're hands off and eyes off, but you're still brain on. So you don't have to be watching the road when you're using it, but you do have to remain awake and alert, but you can be reading or texting. You got to be ready to take over within about 10 seconds. I've talked before. I'm not convinced that this is necessarily a great idea, but they're doing it and other manufacturers are doing it. And they are going to be offering that, rolling that out globally on other models outside of Japan beginning in 2024. They also have a level 2 system, their Honda Sensing 360, which they launched in China earlier this year, which has more sensors, more radar sensors, more cameras, but no LiDAR. And that is more like Ford Blue Cruise or GM Super Cruise, where it has hands-free capability, auto lane changing, things like that. That is also going to start becoming available globally starting in 2024 on models that they haven't yet announced which those will be, but that's coming in 2024. Then by 2030, they plan to have those available basically across their entire lineup. No thoughts?
Oh, sorry. I thought I had froze for a second. Sorry about that. Oh no. You know, I think it's, you know, level three. If you, I know, I've ridden the Mercedes-Benz level three system, and if you live in a town, or let's say you just live in LA, let's just say LA, where you're just stuck in traffic and you're never going more than 30 miles an hour, that's where that thing makes the most sense, really. And I think all these sort of level three systems make a lot of sense, very geofenced on certain roads, going very slow, where you can take over, and it's not, yeah, there's not a lot happening, to be honest. You're just sort of stuck, and you're just stop moving. So yeah. I think in that instance,
yeah, I mean, when you're in that kind of stop and go traffic, yeah. I mean, I would just as soon have something like this, I guess.
Yeah. Outside of that, like, I'm just like, just because people, you know, they get distracted, to be honest. Like, how much, you know, and then are we in incentivizing people using their phones when they shouldn't be using their phones because they can use it at this point, but now you can't use it at this point? And also, you have to wonder about, like, the law. Like, if I have this system in California, am I allowed to use my phone? Because I'm not allowed to have a phone in my hand while I'm driving. And the cop doesn't know the difference between, you know, my level three system and a level two and a half system. It's just, there's a lot to sort of unpack with these. And, it, you know, we're such early days that no one even has one on the road here in the United States yet. So we'll see how it works out. But, I mean, if you're asking me to trust the average driver.
Well, and... Yeah, it gets better because earlier this summer they updated the regulations in Europe. So the initial UNEC regulation for automated, what they call automated lane keeping systems, which is what they're referring to these level three systems as, when it came out a couple of years ago, it required that the vehicles be geofenced to divided highways, and the speed limit was set at 60 kilometers an hour, 37 miles an hour. They've since updated that earlier this summer. So it's now, the speed limit for that is now 130 kilometers an hour, 80 miles an hour. So you can use this at highway speeds now.
Yeah, that's...
I'm not sure that's a good idea.
And I feel like that might have been Mercedes-Benz and maybe Volvo?
No, I'm sure it was. Probably Volvo and BMW, because BMW's got a system coming next year as well.
Yeah, their systems... I don't know. I mean, setting the regulations doesn't mean they're going to automatically set the cars. The Germans and the Swedes are very, very concerned.
Yeah.
About liability. Let's say more so than Tesla. Like, if it's 120 kilometers an hour, they're probably still going to keep it at 40 for now. They're like, you know what? Let's just because they've said. I mean, Mercedes has said if there's an accident, it's our fault.
Right.
So, and I think Volvo said that as well.
Volvo said that. BMW has also said it.
Yeah. So with that in mind, they're probably like, you know, it's nice that the regulations say for future, so they're essentially future proofing the regulations. But I think that the automakers, especially in Europe, are going to be very cautious before they even get even close to that sort of speed, those sort of speeds on the freeway.
I hope so.
At least I hope so. Yeah.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. All right. The other big announcement from Honda this week was that they're going to produce a new zero emissions version of the CR-V. In Ohio, in Marysville, Ohio, starting in 2024. They're going to produce it at what's known as the Performance Manufacturing Center, which until a couple of weeks ago was the home of the NSX. NSX production has ended, and now they're going to build this new version of the CR-V there, limited production. And what makes it unique is that it's going to be a plug-in hybrid fuel cell CR-V. So you'll be able to plug it in. It'll have a battery that will give you some as yet indeterminate amount of electric driving range from the battery. And then it will also have a fuel cell that it can use as a range extender. And they haven't said, you know, what kind of range this is all going to have or how much this thing's going to cost. this idea of a plug-in hybrid fuel cell vehicle is not new. I actually drove one back in February of 2007. Ford had introduced what was known as the High Series Drive Edge. And actually in January 2007 at the Detroit Auto Show, they showed a concept called the Airstream, which was this bright polished aluminum minivan like vehicle that, at least on the spec sheet, said it would have a plug-in hybrid fuel cell powertrain. As it turns out, the actual concept had a little four-cylinder engine mounted in the middle, kind of like the old Toyota Previa. But they actually did build prototypes of this drivetrain. And in the case of the Edge, the prototype Edge that I drove, it had, I think, about 25 miles of electric range from the battery, and then about another 200 miles of range from the onboard hydrogen and fuel cell. And one of the stated advantages of this layout is you can have a little bit less battery, have a battery that you can plug in. You can drive it from the grid most of the time, do most of your driving off of that, and then use the fuel cell as a range extender. And when the fuel cell isn't your primary source of electricity to drive the vehicle, when it's just running steady state just to recharge the battery, it can be much more efficient. You can get more range out of it, or not need to carry as much hydrogen. Since then, there's been a couple of other concepts. Audi's shown a version of the A7, I think, that had this kind of powertrain in it. BMW's shown something like this. I'll be curious to see how Honda markets this thing, what kind of range it actually gets. I mean, obviously, it's probably not going to be available outside of California, because that's the only place where you can get any hydrogen.
Yeah. I saw, well, they showed us this car under wrap, like literally under stuff. Like, we couldn't see the actual design and everything, but they were like, hey, there's a fuel cell. And I'm like, we're like, is this a CR-V? They're like, but I feel like Honda's, I mean, we still have to build up the infrastructure in Japan and in Korea. There's far more, there's far more hydrogen fueling stations, and that's all because of regulatory. So it's, I on one hand you're like, ooh, hydrogen sounds like a perfect solution, but no one's building any hydrogen stations, and everyone's been talking about building hydrogen stations, and then they don't build the hydrogen stations. And I think this is interesting because, especially if you live in the Bay Area, you can go to the hydrogen station, but now you can just, the idea that you have a plug-in hybrid from Honda that you can just drive around most of the time and then occasionally go get some more hydrogen is for people in the Bay Area, I think it'll be, you'll see them out there. I mean, I see Mirais out there. I don't see as many Nexos as I thought I would, but I see a lot of Mirais. And so, I think, they're for, especially for folks who are just kind of concerned about the infrastructure, this might be something where they're like, hey, you can also just drive it around after you plug it into your house. So we'll see.
Yeah. One other interesting detail that I noticed, they're building this, they're going to build this thing in the PMC where they, up until a couple of weeks ago, were building the NSX. So they're replacing the NSX with a new production fuel cell vehicle. Back in 2005, when they ended production of the first generation NSX, that car was built at the Honda's Tochigi factory in Japan. And after they finished building the NSX, they retooled that factory to build a fuel cell car, the original FCX Clarity, starting in 2007 or 2008. So that's twice now that the NSX, two generations of NSXs that have been replaced in their factories by fuel cell vehicles.
By fuel cells.
Yeah.
It's a harbinger of hydrogen.
Okay. Next up, something completely different. In the last couple of weeks, we've had announcements of two very high performance sports cars that now have off-road variants, sort of. the Lamborghini Huracan Sterrato and the Porsche 911 Dakar. I don't know what to say about these.
I am here for both of these vehicles. I like the idea of a fast. I like the Porsche Safari. I like anytime someone safaris out a Porsche, a 911 of any generation. I don't care. I don't know. I like these types of I don't know, gimmicks, I guess.
Yeah. Well, at least with the 911, you know, it's got a history of being used as a rally car, you know, going back to the 1960s, actually. And, you know, during the 80s, there were 911 variants that were developed for the Paris-Dakar rally, you know, and they won the Paris-Dakar rally. So it's not an entirely new thing. And in fact, the photos of the car that Porsche has released, it carries the a version of the old Rothmans livery that was on those Paris-Dakar cars in the mid 80s, but without the word. It says Rough Roads instead of Rothmans, the tobacco company. And it's got the number 953, which was the type number of the original 911 Dakar racer. It was a type 953. So, you know, it actually has some heritage this way, but a Huracan, an off-road Huracan?
I don't know. It seems like I would totally drive it. If I had a lot of money, what Huracan are you going to get? I'm going to get the off-roading one of the 1500 they're going to make.
You know, in the photos of this thing, you know, with the way they've done the coloring and the dust and everything and the environment they've set the car in, yeah, it looks like something straight out of Mad Max. This is the Mad Max Lamborghini, I guess.
You throw some flamethrowers on that thing, it's ready to rock.
Maybe some missile launchers.
Missile launchers, flamethrowers, bullets, whatever you need to get through the wasteland.
Yeah.
That's what they're going to have.
There's going to be 2,500 units of the 911 Dakar at a starting price of $223,450. 473 horsepower, twin turbo, flat six. And then the Huracan, the Huracan has got what? 1499 units. No U.S. price for the Huracan Sterrato yet, although the European price is $270,000.
Yeah,
so
they're probably all sold out.
Yeah, they probably are.
to be honest, they're probably all sold out. So unless you're a current Lamborghini owner, you probably have
to be a current Lamborghini owner and be friends with your local dealer.
Yeah, you're like, hey, I got a secret. I have to motor. I got to run. I got to go to this dinner now.
There, all right.
Because I have to go across the vast. Of the win to go to a room to then go somewhere else. I don't know where the hell we're
going. All right. Well, have fun with the McLaren and then in the UK. And I'm going to go ahead and answer a couple of questions here and wrap it up for this week. So thanks, Robbie, for taking a few minutes of your time.
Bye, everybody.
All right, bye.
I hope I won't wreck a McLaren.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. All right. So we did get three questions in. First one is from Dave Marsh. Dave asks, the time's approaching for a new purchase. I want to ask what to buy. You guys explained that already. My question is, what is your opinion on trim level? So first, he's asking about the Subaru Outback 2023, fully trimmed out with Napa leather, or just stick with the Wilderness package. Both have the 2.4. The Wilderness exterior and blackout trim appeals to me, but the leather ventilated seats are calling. I've driven the Wilderness, but not a leather version. I'd like your thoughts and impressions. I'm going to replace one day a JKU. So the car has to get jobs done. But on the other hand, I'm old enough that maybe I want a car with some comfort. I'm not buying an SUV and want a wagon package that offers good value for money, hence the Outback. So, yeah, I mean, the Outback is a great form factor. You know, it is a lifted wagon. You know, and I'm all about the wagons. I love station wagons. I think while ventilated leather seats are nice, it's a Subaru. This is not, you know, a high end luxury car. I would go with the Wilderness. You know, it's fine. It's going to be great. You know, and even if it's got cloth seats, you know, that's going to be fine. They're going to be durable. I mean, whatever you get, you know, this is a Subaru. It's going to be very durable. Go with whatever you like, or more importantly, whatever you can actually get your hands on. That's probably as critical as anything at this stage. But I would say the Wilderness is probably a good choice for you. Richard DiCarlo asks, hey guys, just wanted to give my impressions on the future of the combustion engine. It seems like the current government wants to kill it along with the rest of the world, only to substitute it with batteries that are just as harmful to the environment as the extraction of oil. Not to mention that the cobalt and other raw materials are coming from countries that are not friendly to us, and we don't seem to be interested in mining those minerals in our country. Backwards thinking, if you ask me. But that being said, hybrid vehicles, for the most part, will be the only way that you'll get flyover country to embrace some type of transition. You guys seem to live in areas where there is a lot of charging stations, but for the most part, the rest of the country, they don't live near a big metropolitan area, do not have to, and won't have that for a long time. Just wanted to get your opinion. I love your show. Keep up the good work. Thanks, Richard. So, yes, there is a movement to phase out internal combustion, particularly internal combustion that is powered by fossil fuels. The current administration definitely wants to get rid of it. Certainly, most European countries want to eliminate internal combustion. But the reality is it's still going to be, you know, we've got such a large fleet of vehicles on the road. It's going to take decades to replace all those vehicles. They're going to be around for a long time. As for the environmental challenges of batteries, it's true that for the materials used in batteries today, notably the cobalt other raw materials, you know, most of the cobalt today is mined in Central Africa in less than ideal humanitarian conditions. However, it's not the only source of cobalt. We are actually just in the last month, a cobalt mine opened up in, I believe, in Montana. It's the first cobalt mine in North America in almost 50 years, I believe. And cobalt is often produced as a byproduct of nickel mining as well. And quite a bit of nickel is produced in Canada. It's produced in Indonesia. It's produced in Australia. So there are other sources of cobalt. And I think one of the things that we are going to see in the coming years, you know, especially with the regulations in the Inflation Reduction Act that require domestic sources of battery materials and battery components, is I think we will see some, at least for battery materials, I think we will see some relaxing of some of the permitting requirements for extracting these materials in the U.S. We're certainly going to see expansion of production of those materials from other countries besides Congo. You know, that will help. And then longer term, you know, as the number of EVs on the road grows and some of those more and more of those EVs reach the end of their life, one of the factors we're going to see is a lot more recycling. One of the great things about batteries, lithium ion batteries, is they are actually not that hard to recycle. And companies like Li-Cycle and Redwood Materials based out in Nevada, and as well as other companies in Europe and elsewhere, have been doing a lot of work on battery recycling. Redwood is already recycling at least 6 gigawatt hours a year worth of battery scrap from production at Tesla, and as well as from AESC and Vision in Tennessee, and also recycling consumer electronics batteries. And that recycling process, what they call hydrometallurgy can recover about 98% of all those critical minerals from old batteries. And it, you know, from studies that have been done, because you're taking the minerals out of used batteries and you're refining it again, you can actually get, they've actually found that you can get better performance from batteries made from recycled materials than from virgin materials, because every time you recycle it, you're taking out more of the impurities from that material. And so, you know, what we will see, Redwood Materials, for example, plans to have about 500 gigawatt hours of recycling capacity available every year by the end of the decade. And that's almost half of North American, the projected North American battery production capacity. So, you know, if we've got a couple of other companies doing the same thing, we could be getting, by the end of the decade, most of the material for new batteries from used batteries, or certainly by the mid-2030s. So the environmental impact of mining materials is going to be a lot less. In addition to that, there are a number of other competing and promising battery chemistries, most notably lithium iron phosphate, which is much cheaper. You know, the key minerals in there besides the lithium are iron and phosphorus, both of which are readily available domestically. They're non-toxic. They're much lower cost than the nickel and cobalt and other materials that we're using. And there's already a couple of plants, one plant under construction from Our Next Energy here in Michigan that is going to be building LFP batteries, lithium iron phosphate batteries. There's another plant that is going to be producing LFP cobalt materials in West Michigan in a couple of years from a company called Goshen, and likely at least one or two more plants building LFP cells. So that will help as well. In addition to that, there are other promising chemistries like lithium sulfur and sodium batteries as well, aluminum air batteries or aluminum ion batteries. So we're not going to be relying entirely on the types of batteries that we have today. There is progress being made on new battery types and on where we get the materials from. So the environmental impact is going to be a lot less. As for the charging, a big part of the $7.5 billion in the infrastructure package for charging infrastructure is for deploying chargers in less well served areas, you know, in a lot more rural areas, in the middle part of the country, and certainly, you know, I think it's going to take a lot longer to get significant EV adoption in a lot of those states, you know, like the Dakotas and Montana and Wyoming and Minnesota and others. But you also have to keep in mind that there's also a lot fewer people that live there. You know, if you look at where most of the vehicles are and where most of the population is, it's not in those big swaths of the middle of the country. So even if, you know, and on the coastal areas, the Midwest, and the South, we have a lot more EV adoption. That's going to account for a very high percentage of new vehicles. Yes, I do believe that hybrids will stay with us for quite some time. Certainly plug-in hybrids are going to be with us. Even with the, you know, in California, where they want to ban sales of new internal combustion engines by 2035, that doesn't eliminate that those regulations don't eliminate plug-in hybrids. It would still allow for plug-in hybrids. It just would ban sales of new vehicles that don't have a plug or that don't run on hydrogen, for example. So anything that runs exclusively on fossil fuels would be banned, or at least new vehicles. Existing vehicles can stay on the road for, you know, for as long as they can continue to run, but new vehicles would not be allowed. So I think we'll continue to see plug-in hybrids as part of the solution across the country for a good long time to come. And finally, Dan Vesma asked, I was wondering what happened to clutchless manuals. I accidentally bought one in a first generation Mercedes A-Class, and it was interesting. Some of the fun without a sore clutch leg in traffic. Has anything in the last 15 years been available with a stick but no left pedal? I don't think so. I think they have largely gone away. They've mostly been replaced by dual clutch transmissions as the alternative to either CVTs or traditional automatics. Dual clutch gearboxes have some advantages. There can be greater efficiency compared to a regular automatic, certainly better performance. And they're generally a lot smoother operating than clutchless manuals. Or even, some of the early, like the early automated clutch systems, like the early F1 style, Formula One style systems, like the Audi R8 Artronic, which was an automated clutch, where it actually had all the mechanical components of a traditional manual transmission, including the clutch, but it had hydraulic actuators to actuate the clutch automatically when you tap the paddles or tap the shift lever. So it didn't have a traditional H pattern shifter. It had, just a like a Tiptronic style shifter, an automatic, where you tap it back and forth or paddles on the steering wheel. And then when you did that, it would automatically actuate the clutch. And those have largely gone away. Those weren't particularly good to drive on the streets. They worked well in racing and motorsports, but they were generally terrible on road cars. And so they've gone away from those in favor of DCTs, which are much smoother. They can shift much faster than those earlier clutchless manuals or automated clutch transmissions, and they're generally preferred by most drivers. So that's it for this week. Sorry, Robbie had to leave early, and Nicole couldn't join us today because she is on vacation in Europe, touring around Europe with her husband for their 30th anniversary. So they're having some fun in Europe right now. But we should all be back hopefully together next week. If you want to send us some questions, you can send them to feedback@wheelbearings.media. You can still use the Twitter. The Twitter account's still active, although I'm gradually migrating over to Mastodon. You can also send us messages if you're a patron. You can send them through Patreon. Send us messages that way. And we appreciate all the feedback and enjoy. And we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Transform your home in one weekend with paint from Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today. Save.